Part 2. The Prize. Chapter 11. Lucy Gray's words stung, but on reflection, were well-deserved. Coriolanus had never really considered her a victor in the games. It had never been part of his strategy to make her one. He'd only wished that her charm and appeal would rub off on him and make him a success. Even his encouragement to sing for sponsors was an attempt to prolong the attention she brought him. Only a moment ago, her healed hands were good news because she could use them to play the guitar on interview night, not to defend herself from an attack in the arena. The fact that she mattered to him, as he'd claimed in the zoo, only made things worse. He should have been trying to preserve her life, to help her become the victor, no matter the odds.
"I meant what I said about you being the cake with the cream," Lucy Gray said. "You're the only one who even bothered to show up. You and your friend, Sejanus. You two acted like we were human beings. But the only way you can really repay me now is if you help me survive this thing."
"I agree." Stepping up made him feel a bit better. "From now on, we're in it to win."
Lucy Gray reached out. "Shake on that?"
Coriolanus gave her hand a careful shake. "You have my word." The challenge energized him. "Step one, I think of a strategy."
"We think of a strategy," she corrected.
But she smiled and bit into the sandwich. "We think of a strategy." He did the math again. "You've only got 14 competitors left, unless they find Marcus.
If you can keep me alive a few more days, I might just win by default," she said.
Coriolanus looked around the hall at her broken, sickly competitors, draped in chains, which encouraged him until he admitted that Lucy Gray's condition wasn't much better. Still, with Districts 1 and 2 out of play, Jessup watching over her, and the new sponsorship program, her odds were vastly improved from what they'd been when she'd arrived in the capital. Perhaps if he could keep her fed, she could run and hide somewhere in the arena while the others fought it out or starved to death.
"I have to ask one thing," he said. "If it came to it, would you kill someone?"
Lucy Gray chewed, weighing the question.
"Maybe in self-defense."
"It's the Hunger Games. It's all self-defense," he said. "But maybe it's best if you run away from the other tributes and we get you sponsors for food. Wait it out a bit."
"Yeah, that's a better strategy for me," she agreed. "Enduring horrible things is one of my talents."
A dry bit of bread set her to coughing. Coriolanus passed her a water bottle from his book bag. "They're still doing the interviews, but on a voluntary basis. Are you up for it?"
"Are you kidding? I've got a song that was made for this whiskey voice," she said. "You find me a guitar?"
"No, but I will today," he promised. "Someone must have one I can borrow. If we can get you some sponsors, it will go a long way toward you getting that victory." She began to talk with a bit of animation about what she might sing. They'd only been allotted 10 minutes, though, and the brief meeting ended with Professor Sickle ordering the mentors back to the high biology lab. Following what had to be heightened security measures, peacekeepers escorted them, and Dean Highbottom checked off their names as they filed to their places. The able-bodied mentors of the dead and missing tributes, including Livia and Sejanus, already sat at the lab tables, watching Dr. Gall drop carrots into the rabbit's cage. Coriolanus' skin broke into a sweat at the sight of her. So close and so crazy.
"Hippity-hoppity, carrot or stick. Everyone's dying, and you're..."
She turned to them expectantly, and everyone but Sejanus averted their gaze.
"Feeling sick," said Sejanus.
Dr. Gall laughed.
"It's the compassionate one. Where's your tribute, boy? Any clue?"
Capital News had continued coverage of the manhunt for Marcus, but it was less frequent now. The official word was that he was trapped down in a remote level of the transfer.
where he'd be apprehended soon. The city had relaxed, the general consensus being that he'd either died or would be captured any moment. At any rate, he seemed more bent on escaping than rising out of the transfer to murder innocents in the capital.
"Possibly on his way to freedom," said Sejanus in a strained voice. "Possibly captured and under wraps. Possibly injured and hiding. Possibly dead. I've no idea. Do you?"
Coriolanus couldn't help admiring his pluck. Of course Sejanus didn't know how dangerous Dr. Gall could be. He might end up in a cage with a pair of parakeet wings and an elephant's trunk if he wasn't careful.
"No, don't answer," Sejanus spat out. "He's either dead or about to be when you catch him and drag him through the streets in chains."
"That's all right," Dr. Gall countered. "No, it isn't. I don't care what you say. You've no right to starve people, to punish them for no reason, no right to take away their life and freedom. Those are things everyone is born with, and they're not yours for the taking. Winning a war doesn't give you that right. Having more weapons doesn't give you that right. Being from the capital doesn't give you that right. Nothing does. Oh, I don't even know why I came here today."
With that, Sejanus sprang up and bolted for the door. When he tried the handle, it wouldn't turn. He jiggled it and then confronted Dr. Gall.
"Locking us in now? It's like our own little monkey house."
"You have not been dismissed," said Dr. Gall.
"Sit down, boy."
"No."
Sejanus said it quietly, but it still caused several people to jump. After a pause, Dean Highbottom intervened.
"It's locked from the outside. The peacekeepers have orders to leave us undisturbed until notified."
"Sit down, please."
"Or should we have them chaperone you somewhere else?"
suggested Dr. Gall.
"I think your father's offices are nearby."
Clearly, despite her insistence on calling him boy, she'd known exactly who Sejanus was all along. Sejanus burned with anger and humiliation, unwilling or unable to move. He just stood there, staring down Dr. Gall until the tension became unbearable. "There's an empty seat by me." The words came unbidden from Coriolanus's mouth. The offer distracted Sejanus, and then he seemed to deflate. He took a deep breath, walked back down the aisle, and slid onto the stool. One hand clenched the strap on his book bag, while the other formed a fist on the table. Coriolanus wished he'd kept quiet. He noticed Dean Highbottom giving him a quizzical look and busied himself by opening his notebook and uncapping his pen.
"Your emotions are running high," Dr. Gall told the class. "I understand, I do. But you must learn to harness and contain them. Wars are won with heads, not hearts."
"I thought the war was over," said Livia. She seemed angry, too, but not in the same way as Sejanus. Coriolanus guessed she was just peeved about losing her strapping tribute.
"Did you, even after your experience in the arena?"
asked Dr. Gall. "I did," interjected Lysistrata. "And if the war is over, then technically the killing should be over, shouldn't it?"
"I'm beginning to think it will never be over," conceded Festus. "The districts will always hate us, and we'll always hate them."
"I think you might be on to something there," said Dr. Gall. "Let's consider for a moment that the war is a constant. The conflict may ebb and flow, but it will never really cease. Then what should be our goal?"
"You're saying it can't be won?" asked Lysistrata.
"Let's say it can't," said Dr. Gall. "What's our strategy then?"
Coriolanus pressed his lips together to keep from blurting out the answer. So obvious. Too obvious. But he knew Tigris was right about avoiding Dr. Gall, even if it might bring praise. As the class chewed over the question, she paced up and down the aisle, finally coming to a stop at his table.
"Mr. Snow, any thoughts on what we should do with our endless war?"
He comforted himself with the thought that she was old and no one lived forever.
"Mr. Snow," she persisted,
He felt like he was the rabbit being prodded by her metal rod.
Want to take a wild guess?
We control it, he said quietly. If the war is impossible to end, then we have to control it indefinitely. Just as we do now. With the peacekeepers occupying the districts, with strict laws, and with reminders of who's in charge, like the Hunger Games. In any scenario, it's preferable to have the upper hand, to be the victor rather than the defeated. Though in our case, decidedly less moral, Sejanus muttered.
It's not immoral to defend ourselves, Livia shot back. And who wouldn't rather be the victor than the defeated?
I don't know that I have much interest in being either, said Lysistrata.
But that wasn't an option, Coriolanus reminded her, given the question. Not if you think about it.
Not if you think about it, eh, Casca?
Said Dr. Gall as she headed back up the aisle.
A little thought can save a lot of lives.
Dean Highbottom doodled on the list. Maybe Highbottom's just as much a rabbit as I am, Coriolanus thought, and wondered if he was wasting his time worrying about him.
But take heart, Dr. Gall continued cheerfully. Like most of life's circumstances, war has its ups and downs, and that's your next assignment. Write me an essay on everything attractive about war, everything you loved about it.
Many of his classmates looked up in surprise, but not Coriolanus. The woman had set snakes on Clemencia for fun. Clearly, she relished witnessing pain and probably assumed they all did. Lysistrata frowned.
Loved about it?
That shouldn't take long, said Festus.
Is it a group project? Asked Livia.
No. Individual. The problem with group assignments is that one person usually does all the work, said Dr. Gall, giving Coriolanus a wink that made his skin crawl. But feel free to pick your family's brains. You might be surprised. Be as honest as you dare. Bring them to Sunday's mentor meeting.
She pulled some more carrots out of her pocket, turned back to the rabbit, and seemed to forget about them. When they were released, Sejanus followed Coriolanus down the hall.
You have to stop rescuing me.
Coriolanus shook his head. I can't seem to control it. It's like a tick.
I don't know what I'd do if you weren't here.
Sejanus's voice dropped.
That woman is evil. She should be stopped.